More than 1,400 Syrian civilians were killed by their own government in 2012 by a nerve agent chemical attack. The United States and Syria negotiated a deal to destroy Syria's chemical weapons stockpile, but no country with a proper destruction facility would accept the task. That's where an interagency team led by Tim Blades and Paul Gilmore stepped in. Blades is Director of Operations for the Army's Edgewood Chemical Biological Center, and Gilmore is the Deputy Director of Ship Operations at the U.S. Maritime Administration. For their work, they were named two of the 33 finalists for this year's Service to America medals. They told me more about their dangerous work, starting with Tim Blades.
Well, in December of 2012, we were asked to look at potential ways to treat bulk chemical warfare material with a deployable capability. And so we looked at a number of different technologies and settled on hydrolysis as being the quickest to field and the easiest to operate and maintain. So we began the process to build that type of system in February, March of 2013, which, by the way, coincided with the year of sequestration. We did the design and build to include procurement of all the equipment, and ended up building seven of these systems, two of which were ultimately deployed on the Cape Ray, installed in November of that year, 2013, November, December, and then used to destroy 600 metric tons of the principal chemicals that made up the Syrian chemical warfare stockpile between early July and mid to late August of 2014.
And what were the chemicals and what was required to actually, I mean, what is hydrolysis in terms of getting rid of chemicals?
Hydrolysis is, simply put, the mixture of water with a chemical to produce, in this case, a benign waste. And so the purpose of the treatment was to render the compounds not useful for their intended purpose. The two principal compounds that we destroyed were mustard. It's just a classic blistering agent that everyone has heard about. It was created in World War One. And the second compound was a compound known as DF, which is a what's called a precursor to the nerve agent sarin. DF, of its own right, is very dangerous and difficult to deal with. And so we had a significant amount of that and a lesser amount of mustard that we successfully treated.
And Paul, what were the challenges of getting this activity aboard a ship that seemed like the best place to do this operation?
Well, I think from Tim's perspective, there's pros and cons to doing it on a ship. The reason we ultimately did it on a ship was because there were no other alternatives. The United States and our partner countries were seeking alternate places to do it as a land-based operation, but ultimately they couldn't find a place. And
that was like a NIMBY situation? Nobody wanted it done near where they were.
Right. I think some countries would like to do it, but maybe their price was a little too high for the real estate rental.
So you had to find a vessel and then do what with it?
Well, we looked at several different vessels. We were first approached by Tim's team and Defense Threat Reduction Agency in the summer of 2013, just evaluating different alternatives, and we looked at several vessels that the government owns in the Ready Reserve Force. And to install the FDHS on board a ship, you needed certain physical characteristics of the ship, and we ultimately decided on the Cape Ray because she had an enclosed deck. She's a roll-on, roll-off ship. She has a totally open deck that's enclosed, and she had the overhead clearance to install the FDHS. And there are several other factors that made it a good ship to use. Our biggest challenge was really the timeline because we were never considered seriously for doing this on board a ship. It looked like the United States and our partners were going to find a country to do this land base, and it wasn't until November 19th that we got the call that said, activate the Cape Ray for this mission. We had some rudimentary designs and idea of what we had. Really, our biggest challenge to doing all this was the time frame we had, because we had really only 45 days to do this major modification to a ship.
Well, who possessed the ship, and how did you come into possession of it, or was it already in the Maritime Administration?
It is owned by the U.S. Maritime Administration, a part of the Department of Transportation, and it's part of what we call the Ready Reserve Force, a fleet of ships that are maintained at a high level of readiness that we can get underway in 5 days, and typically our job is to move the military when they have to deploy overseas.
All right, we're speaking with Paul Gilmore. He's Deputy Director of Ship Operations at the U.S. Maritime Administration, and Tim Blades, the Director of Operations at the Edgewood Chemical Biocenter in Edgewood, Maryland. And so, Tim, what was required of the crew? I mean, who was the crew? What did it consist of that had to get onto this ship and then perform this relatively new hydrolysis operation?
Well, we had a three-part crew. One, obviously, was the actual crew that operated the ship, and that was ship's master and Paul's contract sailors. We had a Navy contingent who were responsible for the security for the ship and to also provide continuity between the actual ship operations and the outside, as well as the other country ships that provided security for us. And then we had my folks, primarily government employees. I think we had about 46 or 47 government folks that are from my operation back here who do this kind of thing for a living. We also had a small contingent provided by Parsons, which augmented our waste handling capability, not the principal operation of the FDHS. And then a very small group that provided medical support, a doctor and three paramedics. So we were very suited to do the work because this is what we actually do. One of the things that we do in support of our U.S. mission is destruction of obsolete or unwanted chemical warfare material and munitions. We've been doing that for many, many years. And so when we created the system and built it and wrote the operating parameters and trained on it, by that point, there really wasn't anybody else that could quickly put it into operation.
And Paul, what was required to get it onto the ship? Did you have to weld it on, or did you drill holes and screw it on? I mean, how do you get that? It's one thing to set up an apparatus in a lab, another thing to make it operational on something floating.
It was primarily welded to the deck. The units were. We also had to install additional bracing because the FDHS is not designed to go to sea. Ships have lots of different vibrations and ship motions, and we didn't want to do any harm to the FDHS while Tim is in the middle of an operation. Our other biggest challenge was putting all the ancillary equipment. You know, the ship is designed for a max number of 50 people to be on board, and we had an additional 96 personnel on board. So we had to put in berthing units, messing units, as well as communication offices, additional reefer containers for all the added food, because we thought we'd be out to sea for, upwards of 6 to 9 months continuously.
And so how long did it take, and what was life like aboard the ship, Tim?
Well, we were in Rota, Spain for several months waiting for the Syrians to remove the remainder of their stocks. We sailed from Rota in late June and actually picked up the chemicals, transshipped them from a ship called the Arc Futura in Italy, southern Italy, on the 2nd of July, and we finished the actual destruction on the 17th of August. And then finished delivery of the secondary waste, first in Finland and then in Bremen, Germany, by the 5th of September. So we were at sea almost 3 months, and we were very fortunate because we were in the Mediterranean exclusively during the operation off the coast of Libya, about 250 miles, and it was like sailing in a mill pond. I mean, we were very, very fortunate with the weather. We had no weather interruptions, when in fact we'd looked at as much as a 20% downtime due to weather. So that was a really lucky thing for us. We had good equipment performance, so we had no significant downtimes because of that. And so we actually finished earlier than we thought, even doing the theoretical calculations.
And Paul, is the Cape Ray now permanently installed with this gear, or did you remodify it and now it's on to something else?
No, we removed everything when the ship came back. She's homeported in Portsmouth, so everything had to come off. Tim removed the FDHS. We removed all the ancillary gear, the additional generators, water makers, all that stuff. So the ship is back to its normal operating condition.
All right, so very quickly, what were the main lessons learned from this whole exercise, Tim?
Well, I think, you know, one was the ease in which federal agencies, when they really need to, can cooperate. And the close cooperation and actually allowed us to leverage capability and get things done a lot faster than anyone thought was possible. And, you know, the talent and capability that exists in the federal workforce.
All right. And from your perspective, Paul, lessons learned?
That you have to be dynamic. I mean, we were going into this something that's never been done before. We had to make sure that everybody on board was kept safe in the event of an accident or a bad seas or, you know, something happening to the ship. So we had to develop new training procedures, and that was for, you know, teaching Tim's folks to go to sea and for our folks, you know, to deal with chemicals being around them. When we did this, it was the worst winter just about in history for the Norfolk area. I mean, it was colder, snow, ice, three major holidays, which, you know, slow things down. But, you know, just being dynamic and being able to adapt to differing situations and always, you know, keeping yourself motivated, knowing that the ultimate goal here, and I can't echo enough what Tim said about the coordination between government agencies. We had, I believe, 28 or 29 different government agencies involved, all with the common goal, and everybody working together for us to get the ship ready and make sure the ship operated for Tim and, you know, enable him to do his mission.